พุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนมัสสามิMaybe this evening it could be useful to consider together the theme of renunciation. Although in the traditional Buddhist teachings it's right up there with other very profoundly important virtues for transformation, like the dana and sila and nikamma, that's a generosity, integrity, and renunciation. It's right up there and considered as really, really important. I don't get the impression that we hear it spoken about very often. So this evening maybe we could consider this together. Usually when the word renunciation is mentioned, I get the impression that people start thinking negatively about it, and like, oh, I've got to stop eating chocolate for the next month, or something along those lines. I've got to give up something agreeable, something that we like, and don't want to do that. And that's, I would say, a really missing the point. It's unfortunate to view something that's potentially so helpful and so beneficial in practice, it's like in a negative way. It's like renunciation is like a spiritual muscle. And we need to develop. And I would suggest that it's better thought about as an ability for managing our energy. Well, two things, actually. One is an ability to manage our energy, because if we're always driven by our conditioned habits, then we end up feeling like slaves. We're just slaves to our conditioning. If we don't know how to say no, which is what renunciation is, like the saying no practice, that's what it is, like saying no to our conditioned habits. And if we don't know how to say no in the right way, at the right time, then we end up losing energy and we become weak and vulnerable. So it's about energy management, and also it's about establishing boundaries, right? Like knowing this is the area of my responsibility. And although the mind might want to go out and engage with feeling like it's responsible for saving the world or saving other people, the fact is we don't have that power to save the world. We don't have that power to save other people. We can only take responsibility for our own intentional actions of body, speech, and mind. And we can aspire to generate benefit. And of course, that's obviously to be encouraged. And interested in contributing to the well-being of others and the increased harmony in the world. However, we're not responsible for it. And so part of renunciation practices is that ability to say no to going beyond that which is really our responsibility. In the traditional Theravada Buddhist teachings, it's referred to as Nekamma Barami. And again, it's not a small, insignificant add-on. It's foundational. As I was saying, it's like dana, sila, nikamma, at least as I remember the list of the 10 baramis, the 10 virtues of transformation, that dana, generosity, sila, integrity, and nikamma, renunciation. Ability to say no to our conditioned inclinations, and saying no in the right way. That's why it's a cultivation. We can willfully know. We know it's like I can willfully grit my teeth and say, no, I'm not going to eat chocolate, and not going to eat chocolate, and not going to eat chocolate, and then for 3 days, and then we go and pig out on chocolate. That's not cultivating saying no practice. That's just willful manipulation. Cultivating this ability to say no at the right time in the right way for the right purpose does involve forms, and it might even be like, I'm going to stop eating chocolate for a month. That might be the form that it takes. However, it's essential we understand that's not the point. The point is not the form. And so often when religion or spiritual teachings go off or people's eyesight is a bit falling short of the real message, the real point, they just look at the form. And so they think that giving up chocolate or giving up looking at your phone for the first hour after you wake up in the morning, you make a determination, I'm not going to look at my phone for the first hour because I'm getting addicted to it. And that's a form of renunciation. And if we just focus on the form and pay too much attention to whether we're succeeding or failing in regards to the form, it's like with New Year's resolutions, people make these determinations to, I'm going to stop drinking alcohol, or I'm going to stop eating meat, or I'm going to stop gossiping, or these otherwise wholesome determinations. If they're done with just a willful determination and are not really based on an appreciation of how to say no to ourselves, then we can just be building up a backlog of denied passion, denied greed, or denied aversion, as the case may be, whatever our renunciation form might take. So it's not the form that's the most important thing, it's the spirit behind the form, the point. And the point in renunciation is changing our relationship with the sense of self, the sense of I. My way, I have to get my way. If I can't get my way, then I get angry, or I get sad, or I get depressed. Why are there so many squabbles, and squabbles between individuals, wars between nations? What is it that's going on there? So an insistence on clinging to a particular perspective. It's not even rational, it's irrational. All the hurt that's caused, and the far-reaching consequences of that pain, it's irrational. And likewise, even in one-on-one arguments and disappointments and fallings out that people have, what is it that's really going on? It's an attachment to my way, my views, my opinions, my preferences. And what is this my way? What is this my way really? Is this my way really what it looks like? Something that we should commit to? It wasn't there when we were born. We often reflected on this fact, how it takes several years, the first 4, 5, 6, 7 years of life. There isn't a stable, predictable sense of I, sense of self functioning there. All sorts of habit patterns, mental, emotional, and behavioral patterns are developing. However, this I sense only becomes relatively predictable by about the age of 7. And then at the end of your life, when you get old, for many people, it also disintegrates and memory disappears, and then the person's gone. So, well, where's the self? Where's the self? Where is this person that was there? Well, it's a construct. And it's not just a construct, it's a pattern, or a community might be a useful way of talking about it. We have all these various versions of I, the happy I, and the confident I, and the frightened I, the serious I, the frivolous I, all these different versions of self. Which is the real I, the real self? I would suggest it's helpful to see there's a community of selves that arise and cease depending on the conditions that we're in. And we assume that there's a solid, substantial somebody there. Where's the evidence for it? Sometimes people talk about a soul as if there's an essence there, a permanent essence. What is that? It's It's, from the Buddhist perspective, it's an assumption, a false assumption. There's a pattern of activity that we call the self. However, it's not stable. It's not a refuge, which is why, as Buddhists, our refuge is in selfless just knowing awareness, or selfless wisdom and compassion, or the Buddha. And the Buddha is not a personality. And the Buddha is certainly not a lump of bronze. That symbolizes the being that lived in India 2,600 years ago, who realized his identity as selflessness, which manifest as selfless wisdom, selfless compassion. And that was the end of suffering for that being. And thankfully, he gave us all these teachings. So the teachings are about how to take full responsibility for this sense of I that's been configured, that we experience ourselves to be. Who is this I? What is this I? Is it really a source of security? So part of this process of coming to terms with this experience that we have of being a self, of being a somebody, part of it is learning how to say no to our conditioned impulses in the right way. And this is renunciation. It's not giving up chocolate or not refusing to look at your phone for the first hour when you wake up in the morning. Those are the forms, and they have their place. Though the point, and this is why it's important to understand, the spirit of renunciation is different from the form. So how do we engage these practices in a skillful way? Like the fact perhaps we have a fondness for sugar. I do. I love sugar. I don't eat very much these days, very little actually. Stay well away from it. However, I am still very fond of sugar, and I would certainly enjoy eating a load of sweet stuff. And what's it based on? Well, it's based on the pleasure in the past. In the past, I've eaten sugar. And we've got that past experience of delight, of pleasure. And so we see something sweet, and so there's the memory, and so there's the perception, there's the impression, the assumption that I'm going to feel good again if I eat it. The difficult thing is that there's part of our brain that doesn't understand that too much sugar is not good for us. It's just that reaction, just sugar, eat it, feel good. And it's a very primitive reaction. And if we don't know how to override that reaction skillfully, although we might have diabetes, as these days in Thailand, a lot of monks have got diabetes and are overweight. Yeah. A lot of people in society are obese. There may be medical causes for some of them. A lot of them, it's the sugar that's in the food. A lot of children these days are obese. Because of the sugar that's in the food and the high fructose corn syrup that's added. It tastes yummy. And the food manufacturers understand this. In fact, there's a certain amount of sugar and fat and salt that the tongue really likes and the mind interprets as agreeable. And you could virtually just get cardboard and mix it with sugar, salt and oil and probably get people to eat it. This is a part of our brain that delights in that. What are we going to do with that conditioned reaction? Just repress it, grit our teeth, and say, I mustn't eat sugar. Well, we probably tried that, and then as I was saying, there's a backlog of denied desire comes back and whacks us. So the more skillful way of cultivating renunciation is to make sure that it's associated with, well, first we use what's called indriya sangra, or an intentional inhibition. This is, which is different from just willful denying something. It's intentional inhibition, intentionally inhibiting a reaction. It takes a degree of will. However, it's done consciously, intentionally. And then also associating it with the exercising open-hearted awareness. That sensitivity that can feel what's happening when we say no to ourselves. If we say, no, I'm not going to eat these cookies full of butter and all sorts of yummy things and just want to eat it. So what do? We want it. We feel what it feels like to want. I want to eat these cookies. I want to eat these cookies. We really fully own that. If we have access to open-hearted awareness, then we can work with that desire. We feel that desire. We feel our relationship to that desire. And recognize the possibility for, yes, indulging it. You could just swallow it and imagine what it's going to be like when I eat those cookies, and then we could say, reach out and eat the cookies. We know how to do that. Also, if we have access to open-hearted awareness, there's a possibility of seeing that what happens when we contract out of fear of the pain of not getting what I want, and then push that down, we feel that contraction taking place, and that's dangerous, and realize, no, that's not skillful. And so stay in open-hearted awareness, open-hearted sensitivity. Feel what it feels like to inhibit the desire to reach out and eat those cookies, or to reach out and look at your phone. I want to look at my phone. You know, a lot of people now struggling because of addiction to these devices, and it's very difficult. And the dopamine hit means from the past you've got a good hit, so now you want to do it again. So yes, we have that memory, we have that perception. Can we say no to that impulse? No, and then feel how that feels. If, as we've spoken about many times before, we've still got a big backlog of denied desire or denied aversion, like we get angry when I don't get what I want. That's the other thing there. Like denied aversion, if we've got a backlog of that, then it's very difficult to read the condition in our heart when I'm not getting what I want. If I'm not getting the approval, or if I get what I don't want, if somebody speaks to me in a way that I don't like, and then there's this anger comes up and it takes us over. If we've got a backlog of denied anger, then it's very difficult to cultivate too much renunciation. We can operate at entry level. However, it's not necessarily going to be very refined. It's going to be difficult to reflect on the process. We should still try, however, we're going to be probably struggling a bit until we've dealt with that, or those backlogs of denied anger, or denied fear, or denied desire, endured through them, burnt through them, until walked through them, breathed through them, until they've been burnt off and we get a more manageable situation in our hearts. And open-hearted awareness, I'm talking about a sense of ease in our chest, or a sense of aliveness in the center of our chest, where we can feel what we're feeling. I don't want to eat that cookie. I do want to eat that cookie. I don't want to eat that cookie. I do want to eat that cookie. Well, actually, it's just wanting, isn't it? It's just wanting. And then you stop the impulse, intentionally inhibit it with Indriya Sangra, and then you get the reaction of whatever it is. I'm never going to feel happier again if I can't eat that cookie. Well, yeah, that's what it can feel like. Or if I don't have a cigarette, I won't feel happier if I don't have a cigarette. Yeah. I'll die if I don't have a cigarette. I can feel that way with the various addictions. And so training in a renunciation in a skillful way, yes, with Indriya Sangha, with intentional inhibition, the restraint, the containment of the impulse to reach out and grab the cookie or look at your phone, or have a cigarette, whatever it is, restraining that. And then with the skill of reading what's happening in the body. And if we're trying to do this with our heads, no way. No way. It come down into our hearts, maybe into our belly. Maybe there's fear manifesting in the belly, rumbling away. Feeling in our hearts, feeling in our belly, reading it, looking at it, and studying it. This honesty, this investigation, can support us in our cultivation of Nikamma Bharami, or our cultivation of the saying no practice, or our cultivation of renunciation. But this is not anything new or anything different. It's right there, and as I was saying before, in the list of the 10 paramis, you know, dana, sila, nikama. Dana, why does that come first in the list of the 10 paramis, the 10 virtues of transformation? It's because dana, or generosity, accords with open-heartedness, supports open-heartedness. It's the opposite of the contraction of I want for myself, taking for myself. The opposite of that is giving away to others, even if we don't totally mean it. To encourage ourselves to give away, like to make offerings to the shrine, or to pay attention to somebody else, is a gesture of generosity. Just a little moment of opening of the heart, of lessening the heart contraction, you know, the burden of deluded personality. Generosity is right there at the very beginning. Dana is the foundation of all spiritual practice because it supports open-heartedness. If there isn't open-heartedness, if there isn't that sensitivity, then all the other practices are going to be difficult. We should still try. Yes, we should still keep the five precepts. We should still make an effort with renunciation. However, we're probably going to be struggling. So it starts with generosity, with open-heartedness. And then it's supported by our commitment to integrity. Wholesome intention. That's what the precepts are about. You probably, many of you will know about that record in the scriptures of where the Buddha's attendant is talking to the Lord Buddha and asks him about the point of sila. You know, what is the point of cultivating integrity? And the Buddha replies, freedom from remorse. That's the natural result, or the natural outcome of cultivating wholesome intentions. That's what all the five precepts about, is cultivating wholesome intentions. And so starting with open-heartedness, supporting the cultivation of wholesome intentions is a commitment to integrity, and then this nekamma, this saying no practice, which is, as I was saying before, also is about setting boundaries, like being able to say, this is the boundary that I need to work within. This is my responsibility, and not feeling drawn outwards. You know, the guilt tripping that we can get, that we can be subjected to, and as if we're responsible for everybody and everything that goes on in the world, make us feel like failures because we're not trying to save everybody or save the world. Saying no to our conditioned impulses helps us establish a responsible sense of limitation, what really is our responsibility. And so with this practice, with this training, let's again remember it's the forms are secondary, they're not the spirit, they're not the point. And the forms absolutely have their place. And we're grateful for the forms. Like the form that we have in our evening puja here of bowing to the shrine. We bow to the shrine, not because that handsome piece of bronze up there on the shrine has any particular power. That's the form, and bowing is the form. What's the spirit? The spirit, the point is that the I is lowering itself in front of that which symbolizes selfless wisdom and compassion. That which we aspire towards, the eye lowers itself. The arrogant, contracted, rigid eye puffs its chest out, puts its head up, and says, I don't need anybody. And that's a recipe for disaster. We all need help, for sure. From the time we're born till the time we die, we need help. And in the spiritual life, we look to our teachers, and for us, the Buddha was our original teacher, so we bow down, we lower ourselves in front of that which symbolizes perfect selfless wisdom and perfect selfless compassion. That's the point, that's the spirit, that's not the form. You know, people say, why are you bowing down to that piece of bronze? They say, well, no, not really bowing down, we're softening the relationship, gentling the relationship that we have with our sense of self. That's what we're doing. Unless we contemplate these things, it's not necessarily always obvious. Materialists don't see these things, they just see the forms. A similar thing happens sometimes when people come to the monastery and they see a lot of lay people coming here making generous offerings to the Sangha. And obviously it makes these people happy to bring all these food and basic requisites and offer them to the monks and other samaneras and anagarikas. And sometimes people wonder, what are they offering for the monks? Or what makes them so happy? And the monks don't seem to be doing anything. They're just sitting there all the time. Well, one of the things that's going on is that the Sangha symbolizes that possibility of committing our lives to seeking truth, to seeking freedom from suffering. And since everybody who's unawakened suffers, when people make offerings to those who are in their lifestyle committed to a training, it's at least ostensibly about the pursuit of liberation and freedom from suffering. Not only do the monks get nourished, but also those who are making the offerings get nourished. That's the point. The form is making the offerings, but the spirit is actually nourishing the aspiration for freedom from suffering. And so those that are making the offerings are nourished, and they feel good. When they have this relationship of supporting the Sangha, they feel good in themselves. And remembering the forms can be very convincing, like the forms of the Dhamma, like reading about the Dhamma or listening to Dhamma talks. You can be fixated on listening to Dhamma talks or reading about Dhamma and conceptual understanding of Dhamma. That's not the Dhamma. That's the approximation of the Dhamma. That's not the real teaching. The teaching is that which these words, these concepts are pointing towards. Even the Buddha said, I can't awaken you. All I can do is point the way. All the Buddha can do is point the way. And that's what the Buddha's teachings are. The forms of the Dhamma teachings are pointings in a direction. And then we look in the direction. What do we look at? We look at our own hearts. We look at our own beings and see, where is there suffering? Where is there unawareness? And what can we do about it? Well, the place where there's suffering, the place where there's unawareness, is where we're caught up in this perception of I, my way, my views, my opinions, my preferences. Of course, we all have them. Ever since we were toddlers, we cultivated my way, my thoughts, my preferences, my opinions. How do we have them? Do we have them tightly and then get upset and get depressed and get angry, get afraid when we don't get what we want? Or do we exercise renunciation or saying no practice and learn to relate to the sense of I with our preferences and our views and opinions more lightly? Thank you very much this evening for your attention.